Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the All In Crypto podcast. I am your host, Rupert, and today I'm delighted to have a special guest back on the show. We have Mr. Vandal, who of course is the Black Swan Capitalist, the co-founder of BlackSwanCapitalist.io. Vandal, how are you, mate?
I'm doing very well. It's always good to see you, and Egon as well. Thank you for having me. Happy to be here and, you know, get into the conversation. So, yeah, thank you.
The pleasure is all mine. And there's so much going on in the world. You're one of the first people that I thought about in regards to trying to make sense of it and how to digest it so that the normal everyday man and woman can understand it. Certainly as it relates to finances, money, the world broadly. We're going to get into a whole host of things. And really the first thing that I want to ask you, because this is something that you talk about a lot, but it's kind of a buzzword that's out there everywhere, and I don't think people truly understand it. One thing I want to start on is the financial reset. And what is meant, in your opinion, by the financial reset? And really more broadly, what is it?
Yeah, so in simple terms, so everybody can understand, first of all, we've had many resets in the past. You see, everything is cyclical. It means it moves in cycles. So currencies, empires, economies, they rise and they fall. And we're living through a period right now where it's no different. We just happen to be living throughout, we're living in the reset. So it's actually taking place as we speak in a very slow, controlled, gradual fashion. So what is it in simple terms? A reset is basically when the current economic system and the way money, the way trade and debt is structured is becoming unsustainable and it needs to be restructured or replaced. That's a reset in itself for the economic monetary system. So in other words, when it becomes unsustainable to these levels, which is usually historically, it's because of extreme mounting debt, high prices, inflation particularly, and just economic imbalance, that's what usually leads to a reset. And it can turn out in very different ways, but ultimately it's the destruction or collapse of a system and a new one is put into place or rebuilt and it's replaced. So what does that mean for regular people like you and I and the audience? Well, typically it's painful towards the end. And what it means in simple terms for us is higher prices, higher costs of living because of currency debasement, which is the value of your currency shrinking. So your dollar, your currency buys you less in the real world. It could be less savings, higher unemployment, less opportunities. But interestingly, there's the other side to the coin. Amongst this entire transition and reset, with all these challenges, there are always opportunities as well, if you can spot them and identify them. And opportunities will lie with positioning yourself in areas that are outside the falling fiat currency. So alternative investments, buying real tangible assets, various investments that we periodically speak about, and including yourself and your channel, such as digital assets, different cryptocurrencies, blockchain technology. We know at some point when things get worse for the fiat currency system and the dollar, capital and money always rotates from one place to another. It never disappears and vanishes. It always moves. So as fiat currencies wither away and become weaker from unsustainable rising debt, money printing, currency debasement, a lot of that money and capital will rotate into stronger assets that actually will transfer their value as we move into a new system, or at least hold their value. So in this case, it would be digital assets, crypto, blockchain technology, networks, and technology, as well as tangible assets, gold, silver, real estate, land, and stocks or companies with good cash flow. things of that nature. So there is opportunity. But in a nutshell, that's what a reset is. The economic system breaking down, and it's going to be replaced or restructured.
That was brilliant. And I think perhaps we're seeing positioning towards that, certainly in regards to what gold is doing. It's hard to talk about a financial reset without actually going back throughout history and looking at assets that have actually served you very well during that period or those periods. And gold certainly is one. We live in a certainly different world today in regards to different kinds of assets, perhaps to what we had through prior financial resets. Before we get on to sort of current day and we look at some of the signs and the cracks starting to show and things more broadly, I want to talk a little bit historically about, are there any points throughout history that you could liken to today? People always bring up the Roman Empire and the devaluation of the silver dinar. And some people would even cite that as the reason why the Roman Empire ultimately collapsed. Whether it is or not is still widely debated, but it was certainly a contributing factor. Also, as a quick side note, before we look historically, to give a little bit more historic context on a financial reset, if you guys haven't checked out Black Swan Capitalist yet, I'm sure you will by the end of the video, and there's going to be a link to that in the description. But Vandal, are there any periods in history, because we've seen this kind of playbook before, and we should all understand history, it holds many of the answers, and me and you spoke about that a little bit off air, but are there any previous times in history that you could liken to today in regards to a perhaps monetary or financial shift taking place?
Yeah, actually, there's countless on record. For example, in Germany, the Weimar Republic, so in the 1920s, they experienced hyperinflation. It completely wiped out the middle class. Okay, interestingly, the Central Bank of Germany and the government there assured people that their currency was stable and there was nothing to worry about. And then came hyperinflation. And it got to a point where it wiped out the middle class. And when I say that, I mean that with no exaggeration. It actually costed tons of cash, physical cash, wheelbarrows, just to purchase tea or a loaf of bread. That's your definition of hyperinflation. It took place in the 1920s in Germany. We've had other currency reformation. For example, Zimbabwe, Argentina. And if we talk about the United States here and the dollar, so 1944, we had the Bretton Woods Agreement. So what was that? It's basically when all the nations sat together at the table, the protected class, the ones that oversee the monetary policies around the world, and they said, okay, guys, here's the deal. The US dollar will now be the global world reserve currency, and it will be pegged to different currencies around the world, and the US dollar will be convertible to gold. And then in 1944, we actually saw a collapse of that system, even though it wasn't, you can't say it's technically a collapse, but we went off the gold standard. So the whole reason we went to the gold standard, started that in 1944 with the Bretton Woods Agreement, was to ensure economic stability, basically, and ensure healthy trade around the world. And then in 1971, we went off the gold standard. So, and as you could see, since we went off the gold standard in 1971, that's actually when currency debasement and inflation started to really pick up and accelerate all the way until today. And here we are today. So what that means, currency debasement, for example, just as an example, from 2020, they really accelerated that like crazy. So they printed trillions of dollars, credit creation. As a result, if you had $100,000 in 2020, 5 years later, that same $100,000 would only buy you $75,000 worth of things and goods. So it lost approximately 25% of its purchasing power. That's currency debasement. It's when the face value of your currency looks the same in modern terms. So your dollar is the same dollar. It looks the same, but it doesn't buy you the same amount it once did. So if you used to buy a few grocery bags, today you only get one grocery bag. So there have been instances in the past where we've seen resets take place. They're not always extremely catastrophic in the sense where it would be people rioting around the world and Mad Max type scenario, but it could lead to that if something fundamentally breaks. See, what we saw in 2008, the financial crisis and the sovereign debt crisis, was something fundamentally breaking in the system. Now, even though it was geared towards the housing market, what we're seeing today is a crack, as you said earlier, but not in just one area or one sector. We're seeing a crack in the monetary system. We're seeing cracks in the housing market. We're seeing cracks in the bond market. We're seeing all types of convergences of technologies emerging at the same time, where we've never had that in history throughout any industrial revolution, because we have 5G, AI, robotics, blockchain technology, digital assets, stablecoins, CBDCs. So as you can see, everything is heading in that direction for a reset already. And I'll argue we're already living through a reset. We just haven't fully experienced or seen it fully manifest, but we're living through it as we speak. And it has happened many times in the past. It's only different this time because of all the convergences of various technologies that we didn't once have before. So it's very controlled.
I think there's many similarities we can draw throughout periods in history where there has been a reset. So the kind of standing order was toppled. I think there's also a lot of differences, and you mentioned some of those in regards to the world that we're now living in being vastly different from the ones back then. Another real key feature, and it's part of the kind of technology that we have today, is the fact that we basically have a global standard for trade and order that perhaps has never been seen. We've never been so globalized as a world. So with the unwinding of this system and the financial reset that I absolutely agree with you, we're living through, it's going to have far broader reaching ramifications. And this might be scaring some people out there, and it should scare you enough to get interested in it. But the message that certainly Van Dahl delivers and myself is there is a major opportunity in this. It's coming anyway. You may as well stand up and choose to, metaphorically speaking, die on your feet rather than your knees. And we can do that through investing. I think you'd agree with that statement, Van Dahl.
Absolutely. 100% undeniable. Where there are challenges, and especially during economic monetary resets, even black swan events, God forbid, they will happen. They always happen. There are always opportunities. And that can make the difference between having a better life or losing everything during those times.
Yep. And it's very interesting that, you know, we talk about, you know, the Weimar Republic and how people would have to take a wheelbarrow of cash down to go and get, you know, a loaf of bread and some food or whatever it was back then. We kind of have already witnessed and are still witnessing hyperinflation with the US currencies, fiat currencies more broadly. I mean, if you think about, you bring up the sort of post-COVID era and the proliferation that took place there. I know so many people that bought their first house during that time period or just before. And today the houses have doubled, in some cases, depending on where they are, tripled in terms of value. So what I think that's really highlighting is the nature of where we are today and the escalation of it, the snowballing of it. And you can get that through the debt markets and the kind of interest that needs to be paid on it. And I think a great comparable is the kind of stimulus that we did during the COVID lockdown periods. I think it was $7 or $8 trillion in the US. The bailouts for 2008 were about $500 billion. So that's a major jump in, you know, in the grand arc of time, isn't such a massive chunk. We're here to deliver a number of messages. One thing that I think is really important is what you're seeing right now, because there's got to be things. I know just the other day, and maybe we can spend a minute on it, you posted something on Warren Buffett, and I never thought I'd see the day when Warren Buffett didn't have confidence in America to the degree that he now does. And he basically said that he was worried about the dollar And this is a man that has a $347 billion cash position. So he's not holding any punches here. Why do you think Warren Buffett said that related to the kind of nature of the system and where it's at currently?
Yeah, you know, a lot of these billionaires and these big figures, they, first of all, they can't just say anything they want anytime they want. So when he said that, it's interesting. It first of all, he has a good point. So he is absolutely correct, spot on. But for why he said that, one could argue he's just being honest at this point, you know, just or being transparent, I'd say. Because the truth is, if you look at all the data, everything supports what he just said. The fiat currency system is withering away, okay? The U.S. dollar, the bond market has all kinds of issues. It's not a safe haven, even though it used to be considered safe. So his statement was interesting because you don't usually get that from people of his stature that are as successful as he is publicly. You know, usually when these big figures tell you something, it's because they want to divert your attention away from something else, or they want to lure you into something. And sometimes that's called strategic misdirection. It's very common on the public stage. But usually there's a personal interest for why they're saying something, whether it's to divert your attention away from something or towards something. But his statement, nonetheless, was interesting and accurate. It could be a warning, and he was just being transparent. But then again, he didn't get into too much detail.
Yep.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Absolutely.
It was very surface level. And how many people are really paying attention to what he said? You know, a very small minority. So, and it's not just, we all have access to the same information. It's about how you analyze it and what you do with it. So that's how I look at it.
Of course. Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think I love that point that you brought up. It's kind of obvious, right? He's not saying anything that anybody that's taken a little bit of time to look into it doesn't already know. And I think we're definitely going to relate this all to digital assets. And what precedes the financial reset, or what the other side of it is, because it is truly remarkable that the cracks, I think, really started to show up in 2008, and they kind of usher in, and we've explored this on the last show that we did, which we'll leave a link to in the description, they kind of usher in or introduce this miraculous Bitcoin by an anonymous individual to us as a kind of alternative to a proliferating dollar or fiat systems. I think that's very interesting. And I don't want to dwell too much time on that, but do you think that's a major clue in regards to what's coming? It's not a coincidence, any of this. The fact that they introduced Bitcoin to us in 2008 when the shit hit the fan, for lack of a better expression. Do you think that's a major clue in regards to what's coming?
Yes. There's a saying that says it takes a lot of planning to have a coincidence. The thing is, there's too many coincidences. So from a mathematical perspective, it's mathematically impossible that all these coincidences lined up around the same time and at the same year, actually. So 2008, financial crisis, sovereign debt crisis. 2009, all central banks reset interest rates to zero. All central banks became net buyers of gold. So they used to sell, now they're buying. In 2009. And that hasn't changed until now. And then additionally, Bitcoin was created that same year, or we could say launched publicly. And then in addition to all of that as well, the United Nations actually held a panel, and they were calling for a new alternative global world reserve currency in 2009. You could verify this, go on Wikipedia, do your research, people. It's out there. It's public information. It took place in 2009. It was Barack Obama and G20 nations. And interestingly, around that same time in 2009, the Financial Stability Board was created. Okay, their job is to oversee markets and ensure stability in the economies around the world. And actually, they have a template for the next financial crisis already on how to respond to it. That's public information as well. So all those things, events, actually simultaneously took place in 2009. And interestingly, Bitcoin was created. So yes, this is all globally coordinated. All financial institutions, all central banks are on board. They know what's coming. I know a lot of people say they're dumb. They don't know what they're doing. But the truth is, we don't give them enough credit for how intelligent they are. They're actually smarter than you think. And maybe they play dumb on the surface, but they are the architects of this system. And they know how to reshape it if they need to. And they know how to control it if they need to demolish it in a gradual fashion so that they could shift us into a new system. So they know what they're doing. But it's no coincidence all these events took place in 2009, all planned out, all by design. Why do you think the biggest tech companies in the blockchain space actually were being funded years and decade or over a decade ago before this happened? Why do you think the Bank of International Settlements was already discussing in documentation digital blockchain systems, you know, several years ago? You know, all these pieces of evidence that we have, circumstantial evidence, some physical evidence, support that they knew this was coming and they've been preparing for a very long time for this transition, this reset taking place. Because ultimately, all that value, whether it's debt, equities, the derivatives market, everything, contracts will have to be transferred onto a blockchain system. And that's where we're going. And that's why all these systems and infrastructures have been in place and huge funding has been going towards the companies and entities that were building these systems and infrastructures. It's not a coincidence. All the innovation and technology always comes from the private sector. And a lot of times it's eventually adopted by the public and the government. But that's where we're going right now. And this has been a long-term plan for a very long time. It's very obvious at this point for anybody paying attention.
I think it's exceptionally obvious. And I think there's a duality to it. There's the kind of trajectory that this technology is on and kind of the direction it's moving us towards. Larry Fink, everybody who's anybody, including the own the US government themselves, are saying at this point, we are going to adopt blockchain technology to be the rails for our currency and our debt system. It goes way beyond that because you've got that aspect of things, that there is a real technological unlock going on here. You've also got what's happening with the monetary system that gives people like me and you vibes that we're living through the reset. And there's this sort of hero that showed up that is the blockchain system that has all kinds of ramifications for us as human beings in regards to surveillance, freedom, et cetera, et cetera. But it's just too coincidental that both sort of sides of the seesaw are actually coming down at the same time, rather than one going up, one going down. It's kind of funneling us, if you will, into this new system that has cryptocurrencies, blockchain technology at the very heart of it. And I think I want to explore with you sort of how we end up there. What has to happen with debt? What has to happen with currencies? I know you're not going to have all the answers, but I definitely appreciate your take on everything. Before we do that, let's talk about what's happening right now. What are some of the things that you're paying attention to and kind of going, this is very telling? Is it what's happening with gold? Is it what's happening with debt? Is it what's happening with currencies more broadly on the back end of all of that? What are some of the things that you're looking at right now, Vandal, and going, wow, things are really heating up?
Yes. So first of all, I monitor all the macro factors because markets are driven and financial assets are driven by the macro factors, primarily liquidity. This is what drives all asset prices. Now, I'm looking at the strength of the dollar, the weakening of the dollar. I'm looking at the global M2 money supply, which is all the central banks' money, the balance sheets. I'm looking at the interest rates. So what I'm looking at from a macro perspective, if I zoom out, I'm looking at fiscal policy, which is governments raising or cutting taxes and government spending. And then I'm looking at the monetary policy side, which is central banks, and that's cutting or raising interest rates and increasing or decreasing the money supply. So those two elements are what I'm really primarily focused on now. I'm looking at the price of assets and seeing what they're doing as well, but that's a lot of, in my opinion, that's distraction. So what we were seeing with the gold price is, I think that's directly tied to something fundamentally cracking in the system. Usually gold spikes or goes up when there are cracks in the system and there is something fundamentally wrong. And then you see a lot of capital move and hedge go to a safety haven, and usually that's gold. But at the same time, I don't pay too much attention to that, and I'll tell you why. Because if you look at, if you zoom out, since 1933, the gold price only goes up, okay? This is a historical fact, and I don't see it changing anytime soon. I think by next year, it will be above $4,000. That's my opinion. I think it's only going to continue to rise, and it's because it prices in currency debasement. Every time currency is debased, the gold price goes up because it's measured in dollars, okay? And you can see this on the chart. I actually overlaid the US dollar over time with the gold price going up over time and the US dollar buying power weakening. And as you can see, when the dollar weakens and the currencies weaken, and I'm not talking about weakening in the sense of measuring it against other currencies, because that's a flawed way to measure it. I'm talking about weakening as in how much can it really buy you in the real world? And the less the dollar buys you and the less currencies buy you, the higher the price of gold goes up over time. So gold is an insurance policy. It's wealth preservation. That's why in 2009, the Bank of International Settlements moved gold from a risky asset class to zero risk, which was a tier one. Tier three to tier one. So zero counterparty risk. That means it's the safest tangible asset to own. So I'm looking at gold, but I'm looking primarily at the macro factors, which drive the markets. Okay, it's not technology. It's not the narratives. It's not how much, you know, smart contracts on these tech blockchains. None of that drives the markets yet. So that would be a beast of its own utility. That would be something completely different. But as of now, as investors, we're always faced with two risks, okay? The risk of missing opportunity and the risk of losing money. So you always have to ask yourself, where are you right now? Are you in the position in this financial environment? Are you in the position where you should be more aggressive, or are you in a position where you should be more defensive? Because the key is to balance the two, but you can't always be 100% in the middle. You got to lean on one side more or the other side more, or start on one side and then later shift gears. And that's why I'm looking at the macro factors, because it's going to determine the outcome of these crypto bull run cycles that we have historically seen every 4 years. So that's primarily what I'm looking at, the macro factors, the technology, smart contracts, you know, all the Ripple partnerships, all this stuff. I've been talking about this for 5 years. I know where it's going. I don't need to waste my time paying attention to the hottest headline, the narratives, all this new, you know, fancy stuff they're adding to the network and partnerships. We kind of know where it's going. The key is to be positioned, not wait for the mainstream media to report it. Does that make sense?
Not wait for the event.
You just got to be in.
Absolutely. Yeah. Not wait for the event to actually happen. I really want to circle into sort of crypto's role more broadly in all of this. I think, you know, everybody cites the amount of debt that we have. And I think that they can, or the US, let's use the US as a barometer for the world more broadly, as it's the world reserve currency. And, you know, the very thing that backs it, for sure, far on.
Yeah, sorry. I just want to say that's one of the other last things I'm paying attention to. It's the debt market. Because the Federal Reserve, you know, a lot of people think their main mandate is maintaining the labor market and controlling inflation, but their unspoken mandate is really the bond market. So they will go through any lengths, whether it means even hyperinflation, to make sure that the bond market is stable. But yes, carry on. We can talk more about that later.
And we're getting into the catalysts for all of this. And it really does lie in the bond market. You can think about the bond market as the kind of bottom floor of the financial markets more broadly. Without that, money itself is no longer what we know and believe it to be today. If you use the fiat systems, this world that we've grown up in is now being demolished if you were to remove the bond market. And this is something that I have probably more questions than answers about, and we can work through it together a little bit. But in regards to a financial reset taking place and where we currently are today, your statement about the Federal Reserve and their mandate is to support the bond market couldn't be more true when you have a Federal Reserve at 4.5%, clear weakening statistics like GDP for the US, and an unwillingness to lower rates, despite CPI, I think headline CPI came out at 2.4 last month, and every reason for them to do exactly that. They're not. Why not? Because the very thing that backs up all the financial markets and this entire monetary system is ran upon and belief in it is based on is in trouble. And we're at this stage right now where, and gold is a canary for that. The actual fact that yields are going up and the dollar isn't is perhaps a canary for that. The fact that the stock market tanked on the back end of tariffs, it's recovered over 65% since then, and the bond market didn't get a bid like it usually should do going into fears around a recession. Actually, gold and bonds have moved somewhat in sync at times, certainly around uncertainty because it's that flight to safety, and that hasn't been the case. What all of this is showing is the real issue with the very bedrock of our financial system. And me and you are here talking about a financial reset that in layman's terms is a new system coming on the back end of the old one dying. And it very much seems like that system is dying today. Vandal, what are you observing in regards to the debt markets and the things related to it? And why is that giving you more confidence perhaps than you already have, or confidence, not the right word, more clues in regards to where we are and how we're living through a financial reset?
Yes. So as we said earlier, and you're aware of this, that empires, currencies, economies, they all move in cycles, and so do asset classes. So right now, it seems that we're at this point in the cycle, from the business cycle, we are close to the bottom of the cycle or near the bottom of the cycle, and I'll explain that here momentarily. The way I'm looking at it is, there is the ISM, okay? It's the purchasing managers. Yes. In other words, it's actually near the bottom of its cycle. It helps us gauge the health of the economy, okay? Which helps us track the business cycle. What's interesting about that is this actually ties into what the central banks are actually doing. And here's how I'll explain that. So that's why we get these cycles in the crypto market. Okay. Yep. So the Federal Reserve, the central banks, they are sitting on the sidelines and they are waiting for economic data to come to them. When they get the economic data, they are going to then determine their next move, regardless what they tell the public. And they do this in cycles. So they wait for the economy to weaken. And they deliberately weaken the economy, whether it's through fiscal policy or monetary policy, raising taxes, cutting government spending, like they did with the Doge thing to eventually it weakens GDP. Okay. And when you weaken GDP, this will help ultimately in the short term, lower inflation. Okay. This will weaken the job market a little bit. And once the economy weakens, it's always followed by strong growth afterwards. We've seen this throughout history, because once the economy weakens, Now the central banks and the Federal Reserve can say, okay, things are starting to look ugly now. We need to use our tools to increase economic activity and stimulate and step on the gas to send things back up. So it moves like a roller coaster in these cycles. And right now, we are close to the bottom of the business cycle. And you could see that through their moves, because what they're doing is they're just waiting for the data to become a little uglier than what it already is. And then they'll have a justification, a good cover to start stepping on the gas again and stimulating markets, increasing GDP, increasing economic activity by cutting interest rates. See, interest rates are like firepower for the financial markets. And they have quite a bit of interest there that they could cut if they really need to. But back to the bond market, what they're doing is they're buying their own bonds, because Japan, China, nobody's interested in buying US debt at the moment. It's still happening, but it's not like what we used to see over a decade ago or many years ago. So this is a form of de-dollarization slowly taking place. It's like a silent de-dollarization. And I'll go as far as to say, this is my opinion, that I believe the US government has already defaulted on their debt. And the reason I say that is because the debt has reached such an unsustainable level, and they can't repay the debt, the principal, they can't repay the interest without stimulating and creating more debt. So it's this never-ending cycle of debt just growing and growing and growing just to cover the interest until they have to refinance again. So my point is, as they continue to do this, our currency is just going to continue to devalue. And if you think about it, this is just a different form of defaulting on your debt. They decided, it seems like, to inflate away their debt by just keeping this going for as long as they can until they bring in a new system. That's what it seems like is happening at the moment. It's another form of default.
I think it's at the cost of us, by the way. Anybody that absolutely holds their always, currency yeah. that this debt backs, you're losing out. You're trying to climb a greased pole. That's why financial exactly. education, because they say knowledge is power. And sometimes I agree with that, sometimes I don't. Sometimes I think, if you have the knowledge and you don't use it, it's not really that powerful, is it? You know, you might be able to sit and talk to other people about it, but, you know, you need to practically implement it, which is what I know you've done for many, many people. If you can understand that system that you're sliding up a greased pole or sliding down a greased pole, trying to get up it, you can actually arbitrage, just like Warren Buffett has done his entire career, bringing it back to him a little bit, and actually buy assets that hold their value, depending on what assets, you need to be a little bit careful there, against a proliferating fiat system. And this is why the rich get rich and the poor get poor. And the middle class, unfortunately, is getting totally and utterly wiped out by all of this as they bring us into higher tax brackets, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the real amazing thing about where we currently are right now is things are kind of reaching velocity. And what I want to kind of come on to is we know that so this system theoretically can keep going as long as the emperor realizes that he's or believes he's got clothes on. When he realizes he's naked, then he's going to start getting embarrassed and things change. But what do you see in regards to a kind of transition? Because I was for a very long time on the kind of point of a debt collapse, and I still am to a degree. A bit of, because that seems like the obvious outcome, right? Seems very obvious that that debt's going to collapse and people are going to realize the emperor's naked and, you know, there's a kind of reset that happens there. The other alternative is what I think the US is going to try and do, and that is they're going to tokenize debt and use it as value itself. So they're going to do a philosopher's stone kind of tactic in the sense that they're going to take debt that's largely already been used to facilitate money in the economy, because that's how money comes into creation through being borrowed. And they're going to do the same thing again with stable coins. And I think that's a way that they can transition this without actually having an apocalyptic global collapse, in the same way that the sort of Bretton Woods moment was. I think it was France that went to the US and said, look, we want our gold back. And then they kind of subtly kind of went, well, we don't really have the gold. And then the realization that everybody's gold wasn't there, and that if they didn't kind of agree on this new system, everything would have collapsed. It happened in an orderly fashion. I think they could do that with digital assets and stablecoins and using the
debt we have too.
A major issue in. Let's hear your take on that and the transition, Vandal, and if you think that's... Because that would mean that debt doesn't collapse. It just gets kind of revitalized, or I don't know what the word would be.
Yes, that can certainly play out in that fashion. So they can continue to keep this Ponzi going for as long as they want until something breaks. Clearly, they have the infrastructure, the blockchain, they're forming regulations. They're trying to slide a new system and converge it with the old system so that we just hop on a new system. That's the ultimate goal here. They're trying to jump over this, you know, a burning fire safely. But the thing is, it could play out both ways. It could be, they could keep this going on for another 15, 10 years until the confidence in the dollar and the bond market hits people overseas in foreign markets and realize the government in the US can't pay their debt back. I don't want these bonds. That moment will come eventually if they keep this going on for long enough, because if we keep this going in this way that they're doing it, just printing money to keep the system going, eventually what happens is, and it's been happening, is the value of the dollar continues to die and wither away. But it will get to a point where people realize that. When I say people, I'm talking about around the world, even your average individual, the masses, you know, when they realize that. That could be a breaking moment. That can actually lead to a bond market collapse. Now, if the US and these governments do the tokenization of debt and slowly do it, gradually transition us in an orderly fashion, that could be done well. I don't know how that, I don't know if they could do that without something breaking in between, but I would even argue that they love crashes and collapses because it allows them to acquire more assets and take more control. This is what they've been doing historically for, you know, over a century. So I don't see why would they want it 100% orderly without something breaking, because when something breaks, that's opportunity. And that's what they did in 2008 and 2009. That's what they did in 2020. You know, billionaires doubled around that time. And billionaires' net worth actually skyrocketed to new highs. So those catastrophic moments, I don't see it turning out in a situation where it's a Mad Max scenario. When I say collapse, I mean something fundamentally breaking in the system and causes global financial market panic. That's what I mean. Not everybody going crazy, driving Humvees with bow and arrows and stuff. I'm not talking about that. That's if society fell apart.
Yeah.
I don't see that happening. Yeah, I see the system collapse, and it could be in a controlled fashion. But regardless, there will be huge panic that takes place, and I see that in their best interest. Because panic means fear. Fear means opportunity for these billionaires and hedge funds, institutions, and clearing member firms to come and acquire assets. And at the end of the day, that's their goal. It's amassing wealth for them and their children, okay, and maintaining control throughout the transition. So to allow things to fully collapse and go too crazy for too long is unlikely, because they wouldn't be able to restore law and order, and it just wouldn't make sense.
That's a major takeaway, by the way, Vandal, there. And you know, it's mine and your job to try and figure all this out as best as we can. And the way you do that is by critically thinking about it all. Could they really just allow debt markets to collapse? I mean, imagine if debt just collapsed to zero. Imagine the world that spawns from that. That isn't a very controllable world. And I would say they already have control almost fully, you know, over the majority of people anyway. Sorry to interrupt you there, Vandal. That was a great point.
No, you're right. You're absolutely correct. But let's say they kept this system, this Ponzi going on for so long. The only way they could do it is by inflating away the debt. So they keep printing money every 4 or 5 years, refinance the debt, borrow more money, get in more debt to pay the interest to keep it going. So the debt just keeps growing and growing. But as it keeps growing, our buying power keeps dying. There will be a point where people will have a realization moment and be like, oh, the government is never going to be able to pay their debt back. I don't want these bonds, okay? They can't even pay their interest. I don't want these bonds. That, if that happens on a mass scale at some point after this going on for so long, that can lead to a crash in the bond market. If the bond market and bond prices crash, what happens? Interest rates spike and they get out of control. If interest rates spike, the Federal Reserve and the central banks can try to force the spike going down by buying those bonds back.
And more proliferation.
But in order to buy those bonds back, they would have to have a force strong enough to combat the force of those spiking interest rates. And that force that the central bank or the Federal Reserve would have is money printing. So to fix that or save the day in that type of bond market collapse scenario, they would have to print the most amount of money they have ever printed on the history of Earth. And as a result, they could save the bond market money, but that would come at a huge cost to us. That would be hyperinflation. So they would completely devalue their currency, but they would save the bond market. So that would be unlikely as well, because that would make no sense. I don't think they would go that route. Another route, they could hike taxes, but I don't see them doing that because, first of all, people can't even afford to put food on the table. I mean, people are barely making it, let's be honest. And it's tough, okay? So I don't think they would hike taxes on a society around the world that is on society when they can barely make ends meet. Second of all, that would be very unpopular from a political standpoint. And any politician that starts raising taxes, that even if it could fix the situation, they would get thrown out of office. They would not get reelected because it's unpopular, especially in this type of economic environment. The other option they have, they could issue in, this is the tokenization part, okay? They could issue in a new blockchain technology, of course, and they can, you know, tokenize the debt or even pay down the debt a little more with digital assets and cryptocurrencies to kind of stabilize things. And it could be a gradual process. That's an option. But besides that, they're kind of in a corner where I think it would be very difficult to get out of the corner. And to get out, there will have to be a lot of pain that comes first before things get better, if that makes sense. Because all their options are not very desirable.
Yeah, and with all these options, one of the main takeaways, again, which is why Vandel does what he does, is to not essentially have your net worth in a fiat system that is very clearly in a hell of a lot of trouble. Whatever route we take, I'm a bit more optimistic in the sense that I think that they're going to try and rejuvenate the old system. They're going to give it a new name. They're going to use the dollar, but this time it's not backed by gold. They're going to do a similar sort of thing, and they're going to use DLT to do it. I think the US is signaling that. Yeah. But there's a whole host of things that could also happen that I can't say aren't going to happen. Any one of them, though, means your value system that you've probably, certainly mine, only known throughout my entire life is now no longer that we all have a belief in. You need to start not believing in that today and start looking elsewhere to store your wealth, not just for you. People always equate wanting to accumulate wealth with being greedy and this, that, and the other. It's not about you. It's about your family. It's about everybody else. Because if this situation goes wrong, like some of the scenarios Vandel's put forward, that's a painful world where we talk about an economic singularity. We talk about the introduction of UBI to support people. And then you are either a have or a have not. You're either a serf or the ruling class. And I think that's their agenda. Do you think about that, Vandel? Do you think about where they want to take this? Because ultimately, this is about control. The monetary system is a controlling mechanism. And I think their agenda is, and they is up to your imagination and probably quite easy to find, but I think there's a agenda to basically have the haves and the have-nots, and that this reset could be a good way of doing that. Any
yes.
thoughts on that?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, all you got to do is look at history. Historically, every crisis that has happened has ultimately led to them providing a solution and ultimately society giving up some sort of liberty or freedom in one sense or the other.
Yep.
And look where we are today. But it's always because of some reason, they say. You know, they justify it, whether it's your security, you know, or for your protection or your convenience. At the end of the day, look how far we've come. You can't even make a YouTube video talking about sensitive topics. Okay.
Yep.
They're taking freedom away. And as things become more centralized, and people can argue saying that's not happening, well, it is. Okay. Just look at the data yourself. Central banks already have central bank digital currencies. Other entities have stable coins, which are just as surveillable and programmable as central bank digital currencies. It's actually all on the same grid. It's a centralized tool, and they could say it's for this or for that. Doesn't matter. It's centralized. Okay. At the end of the day, this is the direction they want to go in. They already have the infrastructures in place. Now, to back to what you said, the whole UBI thing. Look, this is a natural part in this evolution, is the UBI thing. Because the population, 8 billion people, all the jobs are being substituted with more efficient ways of doing things. So through AI, robotics. What are people going to do? They know this is coming, you know? That's why they're preparing systems in place, because not everybody's going to have a job. It's not going to work. There's too many people in the world, and there's too many efficient alternatives that will take those jobs away. And we're already seeing it. I mean, look, the whole industry of art, it's over. I mean, I'm not being pessimistic here, but I'm just saying I could ask an AI platform to do art for me now. Like, I'm just saying there are a lot of challenges that are coming, and people need to be aware of that and not just ignore it and think it's just, you know, fairy tale nonsense, because it's actually happening as we speak. But it's always about control at the end of the day. Central banks, these government entities, they thrive on control. Okay. So ultimately, as we go through this reset, I believe there will be some sort of event that takes place. This is my opinion, and I'm saying that because it's happened historically. Okay. And as a result, there's always going to be some sort of trade-off in liberty. It always happens. I don't see why it would be any different this time. At the end of the day, their goal is to amass as much wealth as they can in this inflationary environment that they created and maintain control. So that's the direction I see it going in. But again, there will be opportunities for people that are positioned correctly during these transitions. You know, you just have to be positioned correctly and don't get so distracted with news and fear and headlines and narratives. Just read between the lines, you know, and position yourself, because these entities are going to be doing the same thing, and they probably already are, and absolutely, they know what's coming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but it's all about control, always.
Absolutely. And you want to not be in the pocket of your government. That's a big thing. When you become at the mercy of a government, and that's increasingly the case, certainly here in Britain, I can talk, but that's a scary place to be, certainly when your opportunity has now been drastically reduced by the likes of AI and robotics and things like this. You need to have some sort of financial stability or wealth that is going to enable you to arbitrage that, perhaps in regards to geolocation, where you live, et cetera, et cetera. You know, this is the beautiful thing about where we are right now. And I use the word beautiful because there is a major opportunity with everything taking place. When was the last time the financial system that you knew was completely overhauled and changed globally in the manner that we're potentially looking at things changing. That means that money itself is potentially going to take on a different form, which means, like you say, value is going to have to flow to places. You want to be positioned in those places where it's going to flow. And I know you're a big gold guy. Do you want to touch on gold? I know we're a crypto channel, but I'm also an ambassador for people having diversification. It's not just, don't just put 100% of your net worth in crypto. You want, even myself, I'm a passive buyer of both gold and silver and have been since I was 16 years old. You should have
amazing.
A backup, you know? I call gold and silver insurance. I think silver's going to have its day. I don't think it's had its yet, but gold's certainly having its, you know? You want to touch on gold a little bit, Vandal?
Yeah, Rupert, I absolutely agree with you. That's how my brother, Versan, and I see it. Gold is an insurance policy, okay? It holds its value. It's wealth preservation. You buy it, hoping you never have to sell it. But if you do, at least you're safe. So you just want to diversify, okay? But you want to diversify strategically. And the way to do that is to ask yourself, where are we now in the cycle? And what is the current financial and economic environment? Okay. The environment should determine how you diversify your portfolio. Okay. Currently, we're in an environment where everything is uncertain. Everything is in a bubble. Okay. And there is too much risk in the financial system and with most asset classes. However, though, gold still remains one of the most strategic places to hold wealth and preserve your wealth, even if we're going into a new financial system, because it's done it for over 5,000 years. It was used as money. Central banks became net buyers, buying gold at record levels since 2009 until today. That should tell you something, okay? That speaks volumes. Forget what they're saying. Look at what they're doing. Additionally, the Bank of International Settlements, which is the bank, the central bank of the central banks, moved gold to from a tier three to a tier one, zero risk, which also says a lot. But if you just look historically, as currency debasement continues, the price of gold in dollars only goes up, which means it's holding its value as currency debases and currency debasement continues, and it will continue. So that can tell you that gold is going to hold your wealth and preserve your wealth, throughout this transition. And as a matter of fact, I'll go as far as to say it will be even worth much more in the new system. And if you look at it just from a different lens, for example, in 1929, if you had 10 kilograms of gold, that could buy you one whole house. Fast forward to today, 2025, that same 10 kilograms of gold will buy you two houses in the United States. So what does that tell you? That tells you that when you measure assets and things in gold, gold doesn't just hold its value. It actually buys you more in the real world. See, the gold is the anchor, the measure of all things. And central banks don't want you to know that. That's the truth.
Yeah, I would agree.
So gold is an insurance policy. Yeah.
As much as I'm, the vast majority of my net worth is in crypto just because I'm that confident on it. It truly is. And I have assets.
I'm like that with you.
100%. However, I do own gold and silver. And I've always sympathized and even perhaps in some cases been a gold bug myself in the sense that it just makes sense on basically every level, especially today when you have the monetary system in this sort of state that it's in, the current regime, and then you've got this alternative, and it truly is a lifeboat that exists outside of it that could, you know, I think there's going to be a major repricing of gold, certainly as a result of whatever happens, even if this it's a really orderly sort of transition into a new system and the reset happens in that manner, gold still does well in that scenario because people like me and you, smart money knows exactly what's going on and knows that it doesn't matter that we've morphed into something else, that the problem's still there and probably overly exaggerated. What do you think about silver? I mean, you spoke about gold a little bit. Just quickly, what's your take on silver? Do you just see it as a higher beta gold precious metal? Do you see it as more industrial? Because I think silver's yet to have its real day, you know? And I think if you look at silver's consolidation pattern, I mean, it's not broken an all-time high since, I don't know, the 80s maybe? You could go way further back than that probably.
Yeah. I think silver is very suppressed. I'd like to add that I think gold is also suppressed. They're both suppressed because of, paper and contracts. Okay. So they can easily manipulate them. I mean, even JP Morgan received fines for manipulating precious metals prices. So they're very manipulated. Demand, extraordinary, and will only increase, not just for industrial purposes, but for other sectors of the economy as well. Robotics, technology. So it is a form and a store of value as well. Now with gold, you could pack more value into the same size. So there's a reason central banks have been record buyers of gold, but I think silver is just as suppressed, probably even more suppressed in my opinion, personally. I do own silver as well, physical silver. Okay. And, I think the price is only going to increase, in dollar terms as we go forward and move into a new system, especially as these technological advancements start to shape things, extraordinarily on a new level. I think we're going to see a substantial increase in silver. A lot of people say they're not limited, but they're scarce, and that's what matters. It's scarce, and it has been used as money for thousands of years as well. So they have their place, gold and silver, in any investor's portfolio. It's smart to have them. And think long term.
Even your big hedge funds have gold and silver as a diversifier. Yes. That's what alpha is, right? If you can find an uncorrelated asset or shows periods of uncorrelation that does well in risk on periods or risk off periods, mm-hmm. I mean, that's gold all over. Let's bring this all to digital assets. So we've spoken a little bit about how perhaps they can kind of morph the system into a digital one and actually use that debt as an instrument of payment. So they can almost turn it into money again with a kind of philosopher's stone of blockchain being the philosopher's stone. More broadly, and this is a big question, we can go into different aspects of it. How do you see, or what's your kind of thesis for being in digital assets? It could be that it is going to be the backbone of the new financial system. It could be because it essentially is, in some case, if you look at Bitcoin, perhaps outside the realms of the monetary system and an alternative store of value. What's your kind of thesis for investing in, certainly you're a great person to ask because you know where things are going, you've got a good handle on it. What's your thesis for investing in digital assets right now?
Well, my investment thesis is focused on long-term growth digital assets that have long-term growth potential, that are disruptive technologies that have a good price. So in other words, they're undervalued. Off the radar. I believe that at some point, some of these digital assets will be remarkably overpriced. Currently, most of them are undervalued significantly because we're still at the infancy stages of this S-curve and this growth of digital asset and blockchain adoption. We're still in the infancy stages. So all the price movements you've seen over the last decade has nothing to do with utility. Utility, when that comes, will take these prices and these assets to new highs. Okay. It will be something we've never seen before. It will be a beast of its own. Utility will be something completely different in nature and will likely decouple from these liquidity cycles that we see. We're not there yet. We know it's coming for some of these assets. There's a high probability of that taking place. because their tokenomics are good. Some of their technologies are highly in demand. Their capabilities are superior for the problems they're trying to tackle. So their solutions are superior, and they have a limited supply of these financial instruments, which is the digital asset. And the value of it is on the network. It's the protocol. So when you buy a digital asset, you're buying a piece of the network, basically. That value has yet to been reflected in the price. I believe that intrinsic value will manifest in the price when utility, use case, global mainstream adoption occurs. And clearly, that's not happening. We haven't seen it in the price yet. And the reason for that is because you can tell that every cycle, all these digital assets, even the ones with strong fundamentals, they go up together and they crash down together. They go up and they crash down. That's because of liquidity. That has nothing to do with utility. So that's its own conversation, a different beast of its own. And we haven't seen that yet. So from an opportunity perspective here, significant opportunity in my opinion, and one of the main pillars for my investment philosophy is not just buying something or a digital asset and investing in these assets that have strong fundamentals, great utility, long-term growth potential, but it's the other element on the left here, which is making sure you're getting in at the right price. Because the truth is, Rupert, it's not always about what you buy. It's also about when you buy. So you always want to pay less for quality assets. And that's the way I'm viewing digital assets right now, is we're so early in the infancy stage that not just the utility and fundamentals look very good from a long-term perspective. And not only are they going to be here in the future, but the prices for these assets are extraordinarily cheap.
Yep. And certainly, if you consider where we're going, you know, this there's a beautiful marriage between crypto and everything that we're talking about in regards to a financial reset. We've looked at the coincidences and said they're not coincidences. When you understand the role, and I've heard you talk about the role of XLM and XRP. When you understand the role that a technology like that might play in tomorrow's world, you know, we look at prices today and it might go up and we go, oh, that's amazing. But in regards to the arc of time and where these technologies are going and where we think they're going, I've kind of given price predictions for XRP previously. And now I'm just at the stage where I'm like, I have no idea how high this bloody thing's going to go. It's going to go as high as it needs to go. What are
all the value will come onto these networks.
And can you imagine the value of a network that essentially enables value in the internet of value? It's just, I have no models for that, right? How do you even work that out?
Well, that's the thing. I don't think the valuation models are, there's a few out there that were done from Jimmy Valley and Molly and a few other individuals in the space, very intelligent people. Yep. I commend them. But they did a few different, and Patrick, a few valuation models. It's something very interesting there, because at the end of the day, back to what you said, how do you value this?
How do we even know what...
The price is infinite.
How do we
it
even
depends
know
on the amount of value.
At that stage, you know? And this is the kind of Peter Thiel world that we're moving towards. Me and Vandal covered this a little bit on our last show. Again, there's a link in the description. We covered Peter Thiel's involvement in OpenCoin through Founders Fund, which then became Ripple, that then broke off, and you had XRP and then XLM, which was the seed investor in XLM was Stripe, who of course is a big PayPal mafia funded organization.
They're all connected.
Absolutely. And the world that Peter Thiel put forward, I think he might have even been at university when he said this. And Peter Thiel is someone you need to look at. I know you have, but the public need to look into in a lot more detail, because he's just so happened to literally find probably 90% and fund 90% of the biggest tech companies in the world today. I mean, that's how this guy doesn't miss. Yeah, and he was the kind of through founders for an angel investor in what then became Ripple, or started off as OpenCoin with Jeb McCaleb and Chris Larson, and then Ripple and XLM. He envisioned a world where actually value could be anything, but there had to be a central point to it where it could interchange, a bridge currency, if you will, where this kind of anything and everything could be used as value. And I actually think that could be the world that we're moving towards, certainly in regards to debt being an instrument for an instrument we can use for purchasing power.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What do you think? I mean, valuations we can get into. If you were to give me your take on XRP and XLM, what do you think they are? What do you think this is? What XRP, XLM, somebody might not have heard about it. Maybe they should. This is kind of your moment to explain them to somebody that's perhaps not familiar.
Yeah, so XRP is the native token of the XRP ledger. So XRP is a digital asset. The XRP ledger is the it's the network. It's the blockchain. And XRP specifically is designed to move value instantaneously, very cheaply, affordably, and fast, without any middlemen in between. In traditional banking, we have correspondent banking. So you have a bunch of middlemen, pre-funded Nostro Vostro accounts, all this capital that's just sitting so they could pre-fund where the receiver and the sender. And you got too much money and too many middlemen in the middle. So what XRP is doing is it's actually removing the need for any of those middlemen. And if you're
talking about the Nostro Vostro accounts that are held by banks, for example, in regards to remittances.
Yeah. Trillions of dollars.
Yeah. What was the figure? Is it something like 20 something trillion? It's crazy.
I would say it's even more right now. It's a ridiculous number.
Mm-hmm. Just to focus a little bit on that, one thing that has gone around my brain quite a few times is, well, if they no longer need to hold 27 or whatever the number is, trillion dollars in these accounts, what happens to that money? Where does that go? Could crypto actually spur on a major economic boom for everything through completely making the system that we have more efficient, but actually unlocking all the capital that's stored within it through a technology like XRP? I mean, these are things that keep me up at night, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely something that, I mean, in theory, it would be amazing because all that trillions of dollars could go back into the economy.
Of course. The
world would look very different, okay? Things would change drastically. I'm not sure how that would work, but definitely. Trillions of dollars, if that were to flood back into the economy because it does not need to be sitting in these Nostro Vostro accounts, then that could change society, that could create an economic boom. But it would certainly be different than previous economic booms we've seen before, because before, everybody needed a job. Everybody, when there's a boom, everybody's working. Well, now the case is different because you got robotics and AI. So not everybody's going to be working even if there's a boom. So how do you determine an economic boom? What
just
is that?
Probably in today's prices world? Because of an increase in liquid money. And I also think that is something that I've thought about quite a lot is, well, what happens to that money in Nostro Vostro accounts? They're not just going to keep that sat there, are they? They don't need to. That's probably going to go places, maybe into assets, probably quite likely that they might want to hold. Maybe into those cryptos specifically. I think the other really interesting thing is that, and we'll link this back to XRP and XLM in just a second. If they can start tokenizing debt and actually using it for payments, well, you're taking a 37, it's more globally, but certainly in the US, $1 trillion market, and now completely unlocking it. Like what's the ramifications of that? What's the ramifications of creating new money with debt, even though it's already been used to create money? That's trillions that has to go somewhere and be used. I mean, there's so many offshoots in regards to what this technology is enabling. We could be looking at kind of and it's hard to imagine in the face of a lot of the uncertainty that we're dealing with, but we could be looking at an insane boom for assets because of the amount of money that could come online due to this technology. I think that's scary. I don't even know. I say that and I'm trying to work it out. Any
that could even be used to wipe out the debt.
This is it.
So yeah. So it really depends how it plays out. You know, there's so many scenarios, different ways this could play out. Ultimately, there will be trade-offs. Okay, nothing's going to come for free. But at the end of the day, back to XRP. XRP, if you really follow their roadmap, pay attention to what they've been doing for pretty much a decade now, is they have made it very clear at some point, well, in the past, that they wanted to be a world reserve currency or for trade settlement. Okay. This is what they had on their website. This is what Brad Garlinghouse has said in his conference in Asia. And then all of a sudden, the narrative changed. They don't talk about that anymore, being a world reserve currency or taking that role. That's not the narrative anymore. So what's interesting is it seems all their actions are still moving towards being that, that trade settlement alternative, but they're not talking about that. And the narrative has kind of shifted on the public surface, because ultimately what XRP, what Ripple wants to do, what XRP will be used for, it seems like, is to tokenize or tackle the derivatives market, which is over $250 billion. Okay. It's not cross-border payments. It's not this and that. It's the derivatives market. This seems like their ultimate goal, to tackle all the money. So it's going to be interesting to see how this unfolds in the future when regulations come into place and more adoption takes place. But ultimately, XRP is a digital asset, or you could call it a financial instrument, to move value. You can even consider it a bridge currency to move value and facilitate liquidity, because it's so fast. It's instant, cheap, and it's energy efficient as well. So once all the value, or a lot of the value, starts making its way onto the XRP ledger, the network, because the XRP ledger, XRP has a limited supply, it comes back to supply and demand. It's that tokenomics. And that supply and demand, if the supply is capped and demand keeps rising because of utility, use cases, all this debt, whether it's equities, value debt coming onto the network, that's going to ultimately result in price increasing if we measure it in dollars. So, and for XLM, which is the Stellar network, it seems that their ultimate goal is to have a network and a payment system for peer-to-peer. That seems what they tried to be hinting at with their commercials and the fact that they're a nonprofit. So I think it's intelligent to consider holding both in your portfolio, and don't get concerned with the short-term fluctuations in price, the volatility, but think long-term. And I think it's even smart to take advantage of significant price increases if you're in the position to do that. But I would never suggest or recommend selling all your XRP or selling too soon either.
Because we don't know.
You have to have a portion long-term, because you don't know exactly.
Yeah. We don't know exactly how sort of
things are going to play out.
I think we're both very confident in the role that they're going to play. There is clearly a distinction. I read something the other day, and it really examined kind of Jeb's fallout with Chris Larson. It was predominantly in how that was kind of like staged. And actually all that really happened was he was assigned a new mission. They're the same arms, basically.
I believe that. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're the same arms, basically, of the same body, right? Or they're two arms of the same body and both funded by the same people. The people that happened.
Yeah, the whole fallout thing.
Doesn't make
sense.
Sorry,
Rupert.
No.
It's all narratives. It's all stories. I mean, they teach this in behavioral economics.
Yeah.
People really need to understand this, that narrative, stories, headlines all have an intention and an agenda. Okay. If they're telling you something and it's on the mainstream, getting spotlight attention, it's because they want you to believe something, because they have a reason for that.
And I think one thing that's always interests me is that certainly if you look at Stellar, Stellar is the second most tokenized blockchain for real world assets, second to only Ethereum, which only is there through grace of it being the first smart contract protocol. Ethereum, in my opinion, is in trouble. By the way, talking about Peter Thiel, in 2014, Vitalik Buterin, it could have been 2013, was actually given a £100,000 grant by Peter Thiel. So they're all over this space, the same people that enabled the kind of digital money that we have today. You know, this is the this is why I bring up Peter Thiel and the PayPal Mafia and their involvement today in the crypto world, is because these are the people that founded PayPal and enabled the kind of monetary digital world as we know it. From a kind of an internet payment point of view, they're doing the same thing with Web3. And I think you've got two clear winners in that whole thing, which are going to be the backbone of this new internet value, which is XRP and XLM. And I think one thing that I love about what you do, Vandal, is you've mentioned projects like Velo and Stronghold to me before. And I think that's incredibly intelligent, because to me, the way I view that is it's kind of like being an early investor in PayPal and, you know, Stripe or Venmo or something like that. You're understanding that there's a technology that's changing the world and changing how money operates. And you're trying to get interested in companies that are going to enable that and leverage that technology. And I think you mentioned Velo and Stronghold before. Have you looked into Zabek, by the way?
I have heard about it. I have not looked into it, to be honest with you. Yes, not yet. Not yet.
Yeah. And I only found that through seeing where you were going with the likes of Velo and Stronghold and going, what other companies are a play on all of this? Or what other cryptos are a play on all of this? And ADP, the largest kind of payroll company in the world, the former president, and they could have been vice president, but it's actually on the board of a under $100 million market cap crypto. I mean, that seems a little bit strange to me. That has direct ties to Stellar, you know? Interesting.
Yeah. And what's interesting is on Velo Labs, on their website, Jed McCaleb is one of their board of advisors.
And the chief technical officer of the Stellar Development Foundation is also on their board.
Yes. Yes. So the connection between the two, it's yes. And I mean, that's the thing. All these guys, all these players, they're all working together. Okay, they have a mission, they have roles that they need to play, scripts they have to go by, and most of them making the big changes that are going to drastically change the financial system forever. These players are in stealth mode. So, sure, we got a lot of headlines around XRP and Ripple and all this, but think about it. I mean, you don't really know what they're doing.
Yep.
I mean, you think they're going to report it on the media, you know? This is, big things are happening, and we are never going to have all the pieces to the puzzle, but you have enough information out there to exercise good judgment and determine how you should position yourself. That's really the key. You got to be in these assets. That's it, you know, and learn how to protect it and protect yourself.
And that's going to bring me beautifully onto my last question. Let's say I've just came across this podcast. I've done nothing. I've not taken any inkling towards the financial system. I'm learning about it all today, but I'm believing everything that me and you are saying. What would you do in that scenario? What would be your first port of call? Let's say you've got a little bit of money to invest. You know, you've got a decent job. What are you doing? What should normal people be doing right now in relation to all of this? Of course, none of this is financial advice. Me and Vandal are, we're not giving any financial advice here. We're just talking about what we would do in that situation, or what Vandal would do if he had just found out about all of this. We're at this critical point, and that's believable. What should you go out and do? What are the things you need to start paying attention to?
Yes, first of all, certainly don't believe anything you see on the news. That's number one. Stop being concerned with headlines, narratives, partnerships, all this nonsense. Doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things. So the first thing I would do is start researching the financial system. Try to understand blockchain technology, digital assets, and pick out a few that seem like they are disrupting sectors of the economy. So start with research. Start looking at digital assets that have long-term growth potential and make sure they're cheap, okay? Because you always want to pay less for quality, okay? So I would start with the research. I would heavily consider people to take an interest in digital assets as investments and learn about them. Educate yourself on blockchain technology and take the risk. Take calculated risk. Start making a little bit of investments into this space in the right assets that fit with your strategy. And think long term, okay? You can't be selling, panic selling, or freaking out when prices drop. You can't be following news again and narratives. And you just have to be in. So I encourage people to get invested in some of these assets, these digital assets, and educate yourself on how to protect them and think long term, you know. And additionally, I would recommend people buy, if you can, this all depends on your personal financial situation. You have to consider your age, your financial situation, your financial goals, medium term, long term. Do you have dependents? You know, what's your risk tolerance? Do you have the visceral in your stomach to handle these volatile swings? You know, it's not common in traditional markets. So all these things you have to consider and then figure out, where do you fit on a speedometer from 0 to 100? 0 meaning zero risk, 100 meaning all risk in crypto. Where do you fit in that? And yes, make the investments in some of these digital assets, learn to protect them. Do not follow narratives in the news, ignore it. Don't panic sell. Buy some physical, tangible assets if you can, Gold, silver, to protect yourself in case, God forbid, things go south. And get out of debt, bad debt. Okay, any bad debt associated with credit cards, you know, consumer loans, that kind of stuff, get out of that if you can. Those are my last words.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Vandal, that's really powerful. And like I said, the last time I had you on, I really highlighted the fact that this isn't just about money or anything like that for you. This is about actually helping people, and I truly do believe you're doing that. And I encourage everyone to go and check out Vandal's socials, and of course blackswancapital.io. We'll leave links to it all in the description. There's so much that we could continue to talk about, but we'll maybe save that for another episode. Vandal, as always, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, my friend. I want to thank you on behalf of myself, my audience. I've gained a lot from this conversation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rupert. Always good speaking with you. Thank you. I'll talk to you soon.